Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. Always glad for your time and attention. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations, you can do that as well. Phone numbers are as follows, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. In our consumer culture, the emphasis is on having stuff for yourself. Spend a few minutes watching TV commercials and you see the appeals, get this for yourself. Part of the appeal of smartphones, for example, is all the media you can hold in the palm of your own hand. None of that watching one big screen with other people. But there's a countercurrent going on at the same time, a move for people to share more. And that countercurrent gets a full examination in the book, Sharing is Good: How to Save Money, Time, and Resources Through Collaborative Consumption. Beth Buzinski is the author. She writes and edits on environmental issues, clean technology, and sustainable design. You'll find her work on some of the most popular green sites on the internet and, of course, in this book. Beth, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
So step one, sharing what? What are we talking about sharing here?
Well, you know, we're talking about sharing tangible goods, the tools, appliances, clothes that you've got in your house or in your office. But we're also talking about sharing other things, intangible things like space, or skills, or time, and in some cases, even monetary resources with other people.
And so for the people who like their own stuff, the first answer is why? Why do I have to share?
Well, there are some pretty big benefits for yourself. So if you're looking for those self-interested type of advantages, you can actually make quite a bit of money doing this. You can take advantage of these assets that you might have that are going underutilized or maybe just sitting on a shelf and not being utilized at all. And by kind of opening them up to use by other people, either temporarily or permanently giving them away, you can actually make a nice little side income. You can do this with your time and space as well. We've seen a lot of platforms emerge that are allowing people to kind of make these micro careers out of sharing these underutilized resources. And, you know, another reason to do it would be the social benefits. We're seeing really cool things where relationships and communities are being formed and strengthened by this idea that we can look to each other for support and for the things that we need.
So what got you pointed in this direction? Was there a key moment or a lot of key moments?
You know, it's funny. I often tell people, don't be afraid of this big term, collaborative consumption. You're probably already participating in it in one way or another. And the same was definitely true for me. As a freelance writer, I spent a lot of time alone at my kitchen table or in coffee shops, working by myself and kind of missed that camaraderie of an office. And I started to hear these, you know, mentions that someone was opening a co-working space in my community. And co-working, for those that don't know, is just a shared space where independent professionals, you can be a freelancer or a remote worker for a company, can kind of come together and work elbow to elbow again, have that kind of office environment camaraderie, and also collaborate with each other, share ideas, give feedback. So I started working in one of these spaces, and I was like, this is really cool. I'm really enjoying this. I love this idea of community, that we're kind of all helping each other out as independent professionals. And when I started to look at co-working more, I discovered it was part of this larger thing that was happening called collaborative consumption or the sharing economy.
Well, it's interesting because we had an education on this just last week from the co-author of the book Remote, who got us up to speed on these issues of offices that are not really offices of people working for the same company, but working together in an environment anyway.
That's right. Yep.
And so, was this something that you had heard about? I mean, did it come to your attention suddenly? I mean, did you know that these things existed before you got into one?
I mean, in some small ways, I think we've all heard of, you know, bartering circles, or we've had experience with like Freecycle or Craigslist and kind of this idea of redistribution of things, you know, without a lot of money exchanging. So in a way, I knew about some of them. Certainly, you know, most of us have participated in a library of some sort or a cooperative, a CSA. So I had this knowledge that things like this could be really efficient and useful, but I didn't really start to understand the full scope of it until I started writing about it and until I started researching for this book. There are just an amazing number of platforms at a global level that are emerging to just really help you share just about anything you can think of.
Did the recession then, Beth, actually help the concept of collaborative consumption or sharing in the modern sense? I mean, if people had less money to spend on stuff that they could keep for themselves, were they forced into sharing?
I absolutely think that the recession kind of facilitated the really astronomical growth we've seen of the sharing economy, especially in the U.S. Obviously, when people are having to reevaluate their budgets, having to really think about what matters to me, what is a need versus a want, which is something maybe we don't think of often enough, I think it really set the stage for people to consider this alternative way of accessing the things that they needed or wanted without buying them in the traditional sense.
The book is called Sharing is Good, How to Save Money, Time, and Resources Through Collaborative Consumption. Beth Buzinski is its author and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Let's hear about sharing in your own life. Compare stories with Beth or ask some questions of the concepts that she's touting here on the Exchange today. 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Back to talk about sharing with Beth Buzinski and you when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Beth Buzinski, a writer and editor of Environmental Issues, Clean Technology and Sustainable Design. She's written a book about sharing. Sharing is Good, it's called, How to Save Money, Time, and Resources Through Collaborative Consumption. If you have some ideas about sharing or things that you've done in your own life, feel free to share those here. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. Our Rogue Valley local numbers, that's Jackson and Josephine counties generally, 541-552-6782, email address jx@jeffnet.org. Beth, do we know who coined the term collaborative consumption?
Yeah, it's actually not as new as you might think. There was a paper that came out in the 70s by some behavioral scientists, and they actually were the first to kind of look at the concept of car sharing and to define it as a type of collaborative consumption. And then more recently, there was a book in 2010 that came out by Rachel Botsman and Rue Rogers called What's Mine is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption. So they've kind of resurrected it, and they're defining it more broadly in terms of the new examples that we're seeing now.
You give a pretty good history lesson in here, and it would appear from that lesson that individual consumption is actually a fairly recent invention.
Well, yeah, I don't think we always as a species defined ourselves or through material possessions as much as we do now, or maybe use them as our judgment of personal success and that type of thing. You know, there was a time in our history when we didn't even have this thing that we call money. We didn't have physical currency. Things were done just on barter exchanges, or were you know, communities where resources were just pooled and everyone kind of worked together to make sure that we were surviving and thriving and that type of thing. So I think the idea of you know, focusing pretty much our entire lives on the acquisition of money, the saving of it, the spending of it is something that's new and maybe hasn't been as beneficial as we think for us.
Is there an alternative bumper sticker for sharing people? I mean, there's the he who dies with the most toys wins for the individual consumer. Is there any catchy slogan for collaborative consumption?
I don't know. There's this great sharing app called Yertle, and their motto is sharing is the new shopping. And I kind of like that because it's this idea that you don't necessarily have to go without to be a good citizen or to be environmentally responsible, but maybe just stop and wait a tick before you make that purchase and you know, investigate whether there's another way to gain access to that thing.
There's a riff in your book on local currencies, and I know we have at least one regular caller who really likes the idea of local currencies. Give an example of how these work and have worked actually through the years.
Sure. Well, throughout history, we've seen alternative currencies or local currencies emerge often in times of economic crisis. The Depression is a great example. When there just wasn't currency enough to go around, there needed to be a way to keep trade moving, to keep making it possible for you to get that gallon of milk or whatever it is you needed. So they've emerged in different ways throughout time. What we're seeing now are kind of two different things. Local currencies that you buy for actual dollars, you maybe get 15 for 10, you know, U.S. dollars, and then you are kind of trapped into spending those in the local community because they can only be used at businesses or services that are participating in the program, and they're often the small local businesses run by your neighbors, that type of thing. The other way we're seeing it emerge is kind of through this idea of time banking. So rather than exchanging real currency for these local dollars, you exchange your time, and you can kind of bank on your time, you know, do service in the community that earns you these units of value, and then you can exchange those with other people for their services.
There are lots of examples of reasons that people don't share, and you pretty quickly throw cold water on the "I don't have time" complaint.
Yeah, I think we've got more time than we think we do. You know, it's really popular to say, "I'm so busy, I'm so stressed," all these type of things. But I encourage people always to take a look at, you know, exactly what they're spending that time doing. A lot of times it's on something that's maybe not as productive as it could be. And I do know that this idea of sharing, maybe embracing a sharing lifestyle, it's going to be a big change, and you're going to have to get comfortable with some different things, maybe working around other people's schedules, or maybe not getting the thing that you want immediately because you're waiting for it to appear on one of these sharing platforms. So it does take a little bit of patience, but I think we've all got plenty of time to do it.
You also raise the issue of safety. And by that, do you mean that people are just afraid to get into sharing situations with strangers, or is it just kind of getting outside your comfort zone as a person who's generally bought things for yourself or your family?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we're all pretty accustomed to buying something and then being protective of it. You know, we don't open our homes or cars traditionally up to other people, especially people that we don't know. And many of these platforms and kind of, you know, collaborative consumption ideas are encouraging you to do just that. So trust has been a big barrier and probably will continue to be so for some time as we get used to it. What it's important to know is that not only are these companies that are facilitating sharing doing a really good job of instating policies and different types of guarantees and security measures so that you can be as safe as possible, but that, you know, in order to get trust, you sort of have to give it. And the best way to kind of get comfortable doing these kind of things is to share something, you know, that's small and convenient, and just kind of to feel it out and see how it works, and realize that in most cases, people really rise to the challenge and do their best to maintain a good reputation.
All right, let's run with that then. What's a good place for people to start? What's a good first thing to share, tangible or not, as a way to just kind of get a foot in the pool?
You know, I think we're all kind of comfortable with the idea of donating things, like we'll drop, you know, clothing off to Goodwill or something like that. So I often encourage people to start with a tangible good. Start with that box of clothes that's been in your basement for forever that you've been meaning to take down to the thrift store but just haven't. See if there's a platform that you can put that on that will allow you to give it in a more purposeful way. So instead of kind of just dropping it off and never thinking about it again, find a way to connect that with somebody who can really use it and learn a little bit about them, learn their story and why they want it. And it kind of gives you this more rich experience. I already mentioned Yertle, and it's a great example again for this. They often encourage multiple people to ask or request the same item that's up for sharing so that you can kind of get to know the different needs out there and really give it to the person that most resonates with you.
And how do we spell Yertle?
Yerdle, and it's actually an iPhone app right now. They've moved it off of the kind of website idea, but there will be an Android one soon, I'm told.
All right, we're talking to Beth Buzinski. She's the author of the book Sharing is Good: How to Save Money, Time, and Resources Through Collaborative Consumption. You can join this discussion on the Jefferson Exchange, pro or against sharing. Join us here at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's John and Vanita. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
I have a simple comment here. The idea of sharing is sort of, it's not new, of course, and it's, in my experience in life, I'm 61, and I'm not a world traveler of any sort, but I've been around a bit. But the point is that the people who have the least tend to share the most, and the people who have the most tend to share the least. And so in our society of a me-first society, the idea of actually sharing is something that's gone by the wayside. And I'm actually glad to hear that there's, you know, some educated folks trying to bring this back around.
All right. Thanks for that comment, John. Appreciate it. And there is some certainly some data to back up what he's talking about, because lots of research indicates that people perhaps in the middle income classes are the ones who actually give more as a percentage of income to charities than do people in the upper income classes. But pick up the thread here, Beth, and give us your thoughts on what John was just talking about.
You know, I think he makes a really good point, and it's absolutely true. Like you mentioned, there has been research about, you know, middle to lower income communities all over the world, you know, sharing there is kind of a way of life because you need to do that to survive. And I think a lot of these concepts are more familiar and more acceptable to those kind of demographics because it's something that they've known and have had to be doing for a long time. And it's, you know, those of us that have maybe had the privilege of not having to be in those situations where we had to depend on other people, where it's going to take a little bit more time to get used to doing this again.
All right. The reasons for sharing that you provide, run with, if you would, the concepts of both population and waste.
Yeah, well, as I was writing this book, I'm just thinking about, you know, what are the reasons where I feel really compelled to participate in these? And it's really a way to address some of these big issues that I feel very overwhelmed by, and I'm sure other people do too. The idea that there are so many of us on this planet all clamoring for a limited amount of resources, and that number of people is just growing exponentially. This idea that some of us have been wealthy for very long, and these developing nations now are kind of coming online and wanting their, you know, version of the American dream, if you will, and there's just not enough resources to go around for us all to live that way, and probably we shouldn't have been living that way for so long. And, you know, all these people are creating an enormous amount of waste. We're dealing with environmental issues right now that are really unprecedented and kind of just huge to look in the face. And I think the message of maybe the green movement, of which I've participated in for a long time, you know, of telling people kind of go without, reduce, reuse, recycle, these type of simple things, that's really only going to get us so far. And I think we need to acknowledge that people want to have access to things and to be able to do things. Maybe the go without and the self-sacrifice message isn't really going to get us where we need to go. So I'm excited by sharing because I think it addresses some of those problems really naturally and gently in a way that people can get behind. And what we see as a result is reduced waste, a better utilization of the resources and the things we've got. And you don't really have to make that much of a sacrifice to participate.
All right. That's a big one because when people think about sharing, they think, oh, wait, you mean I can't have my own thing? Well, in a sense, no. But the fact is you can have the use of those things as much as you need it, really.
That's right. Absolutely. In some cases, we're seeing people gain access to things they never could have had owned in a traditional sense. And that's really kind of closing some of these gaps and making it possible for people in different communities to interact.
You just mentioned the green movement, and here's where I want to take a scalpel between a couple of concepts, because the green movement versus the green economy, you kind of throw cold water on the green economy as it's currently defined. What's up there?
Well, you know, again, I do a lot of this writing where I'm encouraging people to put solar panels on their house or really think about a hybrid vehicle or all these different things, and I stopped and thought, you know, economically and otherwise, a lot of these things are out of my own reach, and surely there are other people who feel like this and feel this kind of guilty conscience of I can't participate at a level that's really going to make a difference because of financial reasons or what have you. And I started to realize that I didn't like that concept, and for another reason. It was just this continuation of consumption. Sure, it's greener stuff or it's, you know, more socially fair products or but it's still this idea that we can buy ourselves out of the mess that we've created, and I just really don't think that rings true anymore. I think that there's definitely a place for companies and products that do that, but I think we need something bigger, something more accessible to all of us where we can really start to make change in this economy.
You have to look with a critical eye at this, don't you? Because quite often the places that are talking about their great green products, the fact is they're still trying to get you to buy those products.
Yes, absolutely.
Just in place of the ones that are less green or seen as such now.
Right, right. And I think just doing a little bit better or just a little bit less bad is not going to get us where we need to go in the right time frame. So, yeah.
Beth Buczynski, there's an interesting claim here, though. You say sharing bolsters the economy. How? Because the economists in us would say, isn't overall spending less?
Right. So individually, we might be spending less in the traditional sense, but what we've seen is that people are utilizing these different services actually to bolster their own personal incomes. Like I mentioned before, we've seen platforms like TaskRabbit and GigWalk. These are basically platforms where you can go on and exchange your time to do errands or complete small projects for companies right in your area and get paid for those almost immediately. And I've seen people string together these micro gigs into part-time jobs and even full-time jobs. And we've actually seen some statistics that a huge amount of money is flowing through the sharing economy into people's wallets. I think Forbes estimated somewhere around $3.5 billion this year. people are making just out of renting out their spare rooms or lending their lawnmowers or, you know, consigning their clothes on platforms like ThredUp and things like that. So we're just seeing people utilize it in really cool ways, you know, in ways that are self-interested. They're interested in making money, but by kind of allowing other people to access the things that they have, they're making a tidy income on their own.
And you talk in that context in the book as well about encouraging innovation and entrepreneurship. You talked about, I think, some of the micro jobs, I think was the term you used, but are people turning some of these into macro jobs, or they're actually spending all their time now with a couple of different sharing ventures?
Yeah, I've definitely seen that. I can't think of the article where it was now, but some people have just started to do this as a way to make money when they were in between jobs and then realized it can be something that they do all the time. And they're not only doing something different every day, but they're meeting new people and kind of forming those relationships in the community. And then certainly, especially retirees and maybe moms and things like that who have restrictions on their time or resources. I met one lady who used the peer-to-peer car sharing platform Getaround to rent out her second car. It was a little red Volkswagen Beetle, and by doing that, she was able to make enough to pay off the other car payment that they had. So people are using it in really cool ways, and sometimes it's going full-time.
There is a whole section here on how to share, which obviously brings up a point we raised earlier, which is lots of enthusiastic people really have no idea how to begin. Are there usually sharing organizations within local communities that you find? Are they cropping up all over the place now, or in some remoter places might it be necessary to seek out something online?
Yeah, well, you know, a community to share with is definitely possible. So if you live in a place where population is limited or where just this idea hasn't really emerged yet, it can be hard sometimes to find people on the peer-to-peer, like neighborhood level, where you can share that way. So I do encourage people to check out these national and international sharing platforms if you're kind of waiting for those things to arrive in your community. But it's important for people to know that there's a couple different kinds of sharing. Obviously, there are these product service type systems where you pay a reduced fee just to have access to a fleet, maybe of bikes or cars that are managed by someone else, so you don't need to own them in the traditional sense. There's also these markets where you can, you know, share your goods either permanently or just on a temporary basis and kind of get them recirculating, extend the life cycle of goods that way. And then there are collaborative lifestyles. You know, I mentioned co-working earlier. There are co-housing communities and different communities that are emerging just for people to get together around an idea or a shared interest and exchange less tangible things like their time and skills.
Is there a fair number of fits and starts in the sharing realm? Because, for example, Ashland, the city from which we broadcast, had an Ashland car share for a while, which does not appear to be around anymore. It seems like you have to get to some point of critical mass where you've got enough population to support your ventures.
Absolutely, yeah. Community, again, is really, it's the necessary ingredient for any of these ideas to work, and it can be hard sometimes to build that if you've got limited resources or, you know, just a limited number of people that maybe are interested. And we've definitely see a lot of duplication. Airbnb, the space and room sharing service, has been incredibly popular, so we've seen lots of different kind of mini Airbnbs emerge, and not all of those are going to find their footing, and not all of them are going to be successful, but I think it's great that what we're seeing are so many entrepreneurs being excited about this idea and so many people being willing to try it that there's, you know, enough of a demand to kind of try out all these different ideas.
You do cite relay rides, which I would think, particularly when you start talking about sharing cars, it seems like a perfect example of the kind of sharing that would give some people the willies right off the bat. It's like, my car, I can't let go of my car. I mean, this is a major American possession.
Yes, absolutely. Our cars are very important to us for a long time. That was, you know, very much how we defined our identities as people and independent, you know, adults, was because you had a car, you could go anywhere you wanted. But actually, car sharing has been one of the most successful, I think, types of collaborative consumption, at least on that, you know, national scale. Relay Rides is a great example of a platform that's made it possible for you to take advantage of that vehicle that probably sits unused a good portion of the day. You know, we drive it to work and then it sits, or if you're like me, you work from home and it sits even more of the day. So they've made it both safe and legal and efficient for you to kind of allow other people to access your car on just a temporary basis. It's built around just a couple hours at a time, but it's been really successful.
All right, much more to talk about with Beth Buzinski. Her book is called Sharing is Good, How to Save Money, Time, and Resources Through Collaborative Consumption. We welcome your stories about ways in which you have shared or at least thought about sharing with other people or looking for advice on how to get started. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with Beth Buzinski. We'll come back and talk with her and take your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Beth Buzinski. She is a writer on the environment. She writes and edits on many environmental issues, clean technology, and sustainable design. She's written a book on sharing, the new sharing economy on the rise. Her book is called Sharing is Good, How to Save Money, Time, and Resources Through Collaborative Consumption. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange. Share your stories of things that you have shared or have thought about sharing anyway. And if you're looking for some advice, this is the place to get it. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Does it take a particular kind of person to share, Beth? I mean, there's some people who probably just shouldn't try it.
Well, I think everyone should try it. I think everyone can find something that is convenient and fun for them to share. But you definitely need to come at it with the attitude of maybe an adventurer or an explorer. I mean, this is something that's new, and it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable. It might be a little bit clunky or awkward at first. So you kind of need to come at it with an open mind and maybe, you know, some low expectations. Just kind of let the sharing experience unfold, you know, be aware that it's going to be new for the other person on the side of the transaction as well. And so there might be some bumps along the way. But in many cases, we're seeing that people really, you know, rise to the occasion. They're excited for these things to work. And so they really do their best to be good sharers.
There's a whole chapter on what can go wrong. What is the most typical problem often cited?
You know, I think in some cases when you're dealing with the online platforms, there can be a little bit of misrepresentation. A picture may be worth a thousand words, but it still can be inaccurate. You know, if it's a picture of a sweater, is it really the color of the sweater or the size that you wanted? You know, same thing with bigger things, the condition of a car or the you know, placement of a Airbnb, you know, place that you might stay. So misrepresentation is something that can trip up people often. You know, the last thing you want is to arrive for your Airbnb vacation and find out that the lodging isn't what you expected. So that can be a big one. And then, you know, accidents happen. Human beings are clumsy, and, you know, we can sometimes break things or there can be accidents. There have been a couple, you know, with people sharing cars, and that's why it's really important to point out that these car sharing platforms have kind of gone above and beyond to offer their own insurance policies to make sure that you're not going to be on the hook for things like that that happen. And, you know, I think there will always be some people that can take advantage that will be kind of out there to, you know, looking to see how they can take advantage of these different situations and maybe the people involved. And so you really need to do your homework, make sure it's a well-established platform and that they've got some policies in place that will protect you if something goes wrong.
Is there a bit of a trail of wreckage of crashed and burned sharing ventures, things that people tried and they didn't work?
I don't know that there's a huge number of them. I can't speak for the ones that maybe have tried to emerge at the neighborhood level and then fizzled out. There have been a few. There was a luxury car sharing company that got taken advantage of by some people who actually made off with the cars. They actually hadn't put in the protections that some of these other platforms use, where there's, you know, sort of like a low jack and remote entry and that type of thing, where they could have maybe tracked the cars. And that one ended up fizzling instead of, you know, trying again and putting some of those security measures in place. So certainly we've seen some reformulate themselves, rebrand, or be absorbed even by other ventures that have been more successful. So that happens. And I think that's just all a part of something new, a new industry starting.
Some of the cautionary moves you cite would seem to indicate it's probably a good idea to at least run a few things past a lawyer.
Yeah, especially if you're thinking of starting your own sharing venture. If you want to maybe share a car just between people in your neighborhood and you don't want to go through one of these platforms, it's really important to kind of make sure that you know what's required of you by the law, how to do that so everyone's protected. And, you know, even in cases where you're just bartering things and there's no money exchanged, there can be some tax obligations and different things like that. So I often point people to a great book called The Sharing Solution by a couple of lawyer friends that I know just through the sharing economy. It has a lot of templates for different contracts that you can draw up to make sure that your sharing ventures that you start are safe and legal, and gives a lot of great advice on staying on the right side of the law.
The topic is sharing on the Jefferson Exchange. Our guest, Beth Buzinski, the author of Sharing is Good, and here is Wayne in Wolf Creek. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. You just approached the subject I wanted to raise here, and that in isn't what you're talking about, to a certain degree, just creating a black market in everything, and will provide another way to avoid taxes, destroy the tax base, and further decrease the wage structure and hurt the middle class in this country? I'll take your comments. I hope there's further comments about that. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the definition of a successful entrepreneur is the one who can dodge the most taxes.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the perspective, Wayne. Appreciate it. Well, there's a bunch to think about, Beth.
There is. What I would say is that most of these platforms that are emerging, they're absolutely for-profit businesses. In some cases, they're B Corps, which, if you're not familiar, is a type of classification where you can kind of put a social mission a little bit ahead of serving your shareholders. But I think all of these entrepreneurs are interested in being successful and allowing the people who participate in their platforms to be financially successful as well. Certainly, though, there are, you know, like I've mentioned many times before, these neighborhood level, you know, groups and sharing circles that are just meant for people to help each other out and to kind of be resources for each other. But, you know, as we were talking about just before that question, there are some legal obligations that you want to make sure you're aware of, and, you know, just do everything you can to make sure that you're kind of fulfilling those responsibilities so that you can continue sharing.
But to expand on Wayne's point just a bit, there's that, and I can't remember the name of it at the moment, but it was the big flap in San Francisco over the ride sharing system with the smartphone app.
Sure.
And then taxi drivers were just going crazy about it.
Yeah, well, you know, anytime a kind of a new system emerges, it rubs up against the old one, and they often don't get along for a second, especially one like the sharing economy that kind of maybe threatens to make some of these old status quo industries a little bit obsolete. So there has been pushback from the taxi industry. You mentioned, I think the services in question there might have been Lyft or Uber.
Uber, that was it.
Those are, yeah, two kind of on-demand. You can kind of just go on this app and ask somebody for a ride. With Airbnb, this has occurred in San Francisco, in New York City as well. It's gotten a lot of attention where the hotel industry is saying, now, wait a minute, some of these people are kind of operating as short-term, you know, hotels, and they're not subject to the same licensing fees and regulations as we are. You know, how does this work out? And I think it's important for those clashes to occur, because it's going to help both sides define who they really are, who they're there to serve, how they're operating. And in some cases, it's going to help us to root out some of these obsolete regulations that kind of restrict what people can do with their own property and who they can share it with.
Well, actually, there have been some examples right here in our own region, because, for example, people renting out vacation homes or their own homes for people to use on vacations, which obviously rubs up against the hotel motel industry.
Right. Absolutely. And so in California, especially, I think government has been pretty open to having these discussions. I know San Francisco, I believe the mayor has a, you know, kind of a sharing economy panel that is working on developing policies so that, you know, the old and these new industries can kind of coexist and make sure that we have a clear definition of how they're going to operate and who they're there to serve.
Do euphemisms sometimes help? It seems like if some people are a little scared to get into the idea of sharing something, the idea of swapping something seems to be a little less psychologically hackle-raising.
Yeah, Absolutely. You know, like I mentioned before, this, we're familiar with donating and kind of giving things away to a good cause or to a community swap meet, that type of thing. So a lot of times these platforms are just helping us to do that at a more elevated way, maybe in a more efficient way, and with a bigger community. You know, a church swap meet is just kind of with the people in your town, but what if you could share with people all over the U.S. or all over the world? So I think goods sharing, that type of thing, swapping especially, is really kind of easy for people to embrace. They're familiar with that concept, and it kind of gets the ball rolling, gets you introduced to this more purposeful type of giving.
And the back third of the book, Sharing is Good, really gets into a whole lot of different places, a lot of different sites and apps in which you can make some exchanges, from Chegg to Rent a Runway. Are there any that really took you by surprise, things that you went, wow, I hadn't even thought about sharing something like that?
Yeah, some of them are just really creative. One that I like is called Get Art Up, and it's actually a rental service for different art that you can put up in your home, and I think that service specializes in local artists, so you can kind of pay a small subscription fee and get different paintings and sculptures in your home on a rotating basis, which I just think is really cool for those of us that can't invest in art. There's another one called Plego, which is a kind of like a Netflix, but for Lego kits for kids and maybe those adults of us that really still enjoy Lego. So there's just some really cool ideas where people are relinquishing this idea of I have to own it and then, you know, kind of keep it all to myself, and kind of being willing to just enjoy the experience and then allow it to pass on.
I wasn't sure where you were going when you said Get Art Up.
Oh.
Go over to Arthur's house and wake him up in the morning. The rest of us have tried.
Get that art up on the walls.
Right. What attributes do you find then, Beth, that raise one sharing or swapping site above another, make them seem to work better, make them more attractive to their potential users?
I really recommend that people look for the ones that are well integrated with social media, especially, you know, if that's something that you use actively. I love being able to go on these sharing websites where I can kind of sign in with Facebook and then see people in my existing networks that are already using it, see maybe who they like to share with, who they've had good experiences with. You know, word of mouth recommendations will always be the strongest one. So if you can kind of leverage your social networks in that way, it's really helpful. Really, really recommend that you look for services that allow both the person lending and the person maybe borrowing to review each other. Reviews and ratings are very helpful in building this online kind of social equity, this reputation of, are you a good sharer? Do you consistently deliver a positive sharing experience? And, you know, just like with restaurant ratings and other things, you know, we're going to gravitate towards the people who are active, who are sharing often, and who are consistently delivering a good experience. So that can be really helpful when you're starting and kind of not sure who you should connect with.
There's a fair amount of skepticism, though, about the internet reviews, that some of them are written by the very proprietors themselves, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, is there any way to, any good set of rules to proceed with to know a little better whether the reviews are on the up and up and when you think you might be able to believe them?
So I'm not entirely sure, but I want to say that I don't think it's possible for someone to write a review about themselves necessarily. I guess you could coerce maybe somebody else into doing it, but there, especially with things like Airbnb and the car sharing, it's a dual review process. So the person who rented and the person who shared their car, for instance, will get separate requests to create a review. So it's at least hoped that one of them would be the positive one. And certainly all of those can be moderated by the company. And if someone is maybe being dishonest or attacking or something like that, I think there are policies in place for that to be kind of moderated.
In this day and age, can you make a decent go of getting into the sharing economy? And I mean, if you really want to embrace collaborative consumption, but you're not necessarily particularly internet savvy, you might not even have a computer, as some of our listeners tell us sometimes, what are some of the ways you can proceed, or can you?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think some of the most exciting and really promising types of sharing are the informal ones that we're seeing happen just between communities and people who know and care about each other. So I encourage people who maybe have an existing social group. It could be your church or school or just a neighborhood association, something like that. Kind of bring together the people that you know and care about and talk about what people need, what would be most advantageous to share between you, what would be the easiest, and maybe who might be willing to spearhead that kind of an effort. It all just starts with a discussion about exploring these concepts, and once you want to move past that point, it's just an idea, a matter of, you know, figuring out what you want to share and where you want to do it. And then, again, figuring out a structure that's going to make it beneficial and, you know, safe for everybody to be participating.
Let's go 5 years back and 5 years forward in your own life. Are there things that you would have thought that you wanted to own individually 5 years ago that now you're sharing? And where do you see things going for you and everybody else in 5 years from now?
Yeah, I definitely stop and think more now about, you know, if I want this thing or I need this thing, is there a way that I can reach out to my community and get it instead of, you know, just logging onto Amazon or going out to the store and buying it in the traditional sense? I've that's maybe not something I paused so much to think about when I was a little bit younger, but now that I've discovered this, it makes me evaluate, you know, wants and needs a little bit more closely. So, and I like that. It helps me in my quest to be, you know, kind of more environmentally conscious and also to be more comfortable reaching out to the people that I know and asking for things when I need them. You know, they always say you can't get it unless you ask. And often we feel maybe a little bit ashamed or intimidated to do that, but it's kind of surprising how helpful people can be when they know that there's a need out there. And, you know, I really hope to continue doing more of this in the future. I would love to get to the point where I can relinquish my car and just rely on car sharing. I'm not there yet. I live in a little bit of a rural town, and so that would be maybe a little bit isolating to do. But as these services grow, I'm just excited to see what's going to become more common in our communities, more easily accessible, even if you don't live in a big city.
Well, it's all very upbeat, and there's lots of illustrations in the book as well. It's called Sharing is Good, How to Save Money, Time, and Resources Through Collaborative Consumption. Beth Buzinski, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.
All right. That'll do it for today's exchange. You can find out more about the program and subjects and suggest guests at jeffexchange.org. We also provide show topics and recordings on our Facebook page with the same links available on Twitter. At Twitter, it's @JeffExchange. Tomorrow on The Exchange at 8, we'll talk about a grant to the Comic Studies program at the University of Oregon. At 8:30, we'll learn about the Food Angel program. And then at 9 o'clock, you'll hear about a book about Teddy Roosevelt, Heir to the Empire City, about his formative years as a political figure in New York City. The host tomorrow will be Milt Radford, and that'll be for the rest of the week. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant is Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Stay warm. Have a great day.